Let's cultivate our motivation. We often think of power in the world as being due to having material things, having social status and prestige, having education and money. Having certain positions. But all those external signs of power are worth nothing if the mind is under the influence of attachment. Because then the mind is powerless in the confront of attachment and powerless in the confront of anger. And similarly powerless in the confront of ignorance. So we may think there's power in the world, but there's not. The mind is not free. It's under the power of afflictions. What we want to do is to train our mind to be under the power of love and compassion, under the power of wisdom. Because when these mental factors are strong in our mind, then the mind itself becomes strong. And a compassionate person is a powerful person, because they are not influenced, swayed, moved, befuddled by all the stuff that comes at them, but instead they can think clearly and assess what is valuable and what is not valuable to do. So to make our mind powerful, we need to cultivate love and compassion. We need to make them our motivation for whatever we do. And in this instance, we're going to develop the love and compassion further so that it becomes the altruistic intention. And we use that to motivate ourselves to understand the nature of reality for the benefit of all sentient beings. Because the mind that understands the nature of reality is very powerful. It's not tripped up by all the confusion that clouds others' minds. So we'll listen to the teachings. Try to understand emptiness for the benefit of all beings. To have a spiritually powerful mind that can be used for the benefit of all. To generate that motivation. So we're on verse 111. Likewise, when karma and its effects are thoroughly analyzed, they do not exist as intrinsically one or many. Like apparitions, they affect the rising and cessations of phenomena. Seemingly real, one experiences joy and pain of every kind. So within this mere appearance, I'll follow the norms of ethics. So, when we're talking about karma and its effects, when they're thoroughly analyzed, so when we're analyzing them with ultimate analysis, looking for how do they really exist, what is their ultimate nature, we discover that both karma, actions, causes, and effects are empty of true existence. Okay, so though they do not exist as intrinsically one or many. Okay, so last time I was explaining one or many, the expression in Tibetan is chik dang tade. So sometimes chik is one, it can also mean same, and then tade can mean many, or it can also mean different or separate. So sometimes you might analyze something. Last time we were analyzing the designate the relationship between the designated object and the basis of designation. Okay? So is the designated object the same as the basis of designation, or is it totally separate from the basis of designation? We were analyzing this, looking into it. Okay? So the relationship, yeah, between the object and the base. So we have the plum. Okay? So the base is the skin, this purple skin, and then it's probably kind of what, orange is purple inside, different kind of plums, and all those atoms and molecules. Okay, so we have that basis of the designation. Then we have the designated object, plum. Okay? So the plum, there's only two ways it can relate to the basis of designation. Either it has to be, you know, one and the same with it, or something totally separate. This is if things are inherently existent. Okay, so if things are inherently existent, there's only two ways they can relate. Okay, that's an important point, actually. Okay, so if they were inherently one, if the plum were inherently the same as the basis of designation, we should be able to find part of this object that is the plum. Okay? So if you peel off the skin and put it here, is that the plum? If you put the juice there, is that the plum? If you put up the dried up cells over there, is that the plum? You know, within this basis of designation, we can't find a plum. Okay? So the plum is not inherently one and the same with the basis of designation. Okay. Now again, if the plum were inherently existent, then okay, if it's not one and the same, then it has to be totally inherently separate. In other words, it has no relationship at all with the basis of designation. Okay. So that would mean that if the two things were unrelated, that would mean the basis of designation, okay, the juice and all these cells and the purple skin and everything could be here, but that doesn't have to be a plum. The plum could be over there because they're totally unrelated. Okay? So in the case of inherent existence, things have to be either one and the same or totally unrelated and separate. Okay? Because remember, inherently existent things are independent. They're not related. Okay? When we analyze and we see that things are not one and the same, inherently one and the same, they're not inherently separate, then we can conclude that inherent existence doesn't exist. Okay? The inherently existent plum doesn't exist. Because if it did, we should be able to either find it inside the basis of designation or totally separate from it. The basis of designation, and we can't find it either place. Okay? It's like when you search for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They're either in the bunkers, okay, under the ground, or they're on top of the ground. There's no other place, because we know they're not in the sky. So they're either under the ground or they're on top of the ground. If they're not underground and they're not on top of the ground, then you have to say there's no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, right? Because you've looked, you've checked out all the alternatives, you can't find them anywhere, so then you say there aren't any. Okay? So the same with any kind of inherently existent object. There's only two places, Okay, the weapons of mass destruction, that's just an analogy. When we're looking for inherently existent things, there's only two places, either in the basis of designation or separate from it. Okay? If you look in both those places and you can't find it, then you say there's no inherently existent plum. Okay? So the same thing when we think I, this big me, okay, it's either got to be one with the aggregates or totally separate from the aggregates if it's inherently existent. Okay, there's only two choices for inherently existent me's. Okay, they're either in this body and mind somewhere or they're separate from the body and mind. They're not either place. So we say there's no inherently existent I. Okay. So when you're doing this meditation, you're not just going through, okay, point one, there's point two, there's no inherent existence, what's for dinner? Okay, because then it doesn't move your mind. But you really sit there and you call up this feeling of a real me, okay, and then you examine and you look for this real me, okay? So the real me that's unlovable, yeah, the real me that's a disaster and a failure, the real me, what, you know, whatever thing your emotions grab onto. The me that is unjustly accused when it's always somebody else's fault. That's a good one. That's the one they use in the text and they say, call up the feeling of me. Like when somebody criticizes you and blames you for something you didn't do. Oh boy, we get a big feeling of me then, don't we? You know, we're not going to sit still. What are you talking about? It's not my fault. It's their fault. Okay. How dare you accuse me? I didn't do it. You did it. Yeah. Okay. So then you analyze that I. Is it one with the aggregates? And so then you start to search. You look all through every single part of your body and see if you can find that I. You look through every single mental event you've ever had, you know, and see if you can find one of them that is me. Okay. And then you check outside, you know, then you conclude, okay, well, I'm not inherently one with the body or mind. Okay. How about the combination? Well, if I'm not inherently one with either one of them, then I can't be with the combination. Okay. And am I separate from the body and mind? Can body and mind be here and I'm across the room? A little bit hard, okay? So then you analyze, you really check. I'm going through it quickly here as a review, but you know, you really check in your meditation. And then when you can't find that thing that you thought was there, that big eye that's so offended, that's so hurt, yeah? Then your only choice is, well, it doesn't exist. Because I looked everywhere it could possibly be found and it's not even any of those places. Okay, so it's non-existent. It's like a rabbit sort. Like weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Yeah. It's like the compassionate conservative. Or the conservative compassion. I don't know how you say it, you know. Is it existent or is it non-existent? You analyze. Okay? Yeah. So then another way, you know, so that's when you're analyzing Chittantade to mean one and, you know, one and the same or separate. But sometimes we can analyze something as being one or many. Okay? So we check of something. Okay, this carrot here. Is this carrot one or is it many? Okay. Well, if we look, there's many parts to the carrot. Aren't there? So the carrot can't be one if it has many parts. Okay. Can't be one if it has many parts. But it can't be many, because it's not one. If you don't have one, you can't have many. Okay. So here in this verse, they're looking at the example of karma and its effects, And they're using it more in the other way. So when we create an action, okay, we for example, let's say we lost our temper and said something very rude to somebody, okay, or humiliated them or did something like that. So is that action of being rude, yeah, is it one solid thing or is it many things? Okay, is it one inherently existent thing or many inherently existent things? Okay. Well, if you look at the action of being rude, there's many moments to it, isn't there? You know, it starts out, you know, you perceive the person's face, you hear their voice, one of your buttons get pushed, then you think, ah, I gotta put them in their place, let them know that I'm not gonna put up with that kind of stuff from them. You know, so you develop a motivation, then you think about what you're gonna say, and then you open your mouth and you start saying it, and what you have to say, it lasts, you know, 10 minutes. You know, you're not shy to give a public discourse when you're telling somebody off. You're only shy to give a public discourse when you have to talk about the Dharma. Okay, but when you're telling somebody off, you know nothing's going to shut you up. No way. Okay? So, there we are. You know, is this action of telling, you know, speaking rudely to somebody, there's many parts to it, isn't there? It's many. Yeah, it lasts over a period of time. There's all these different events happening in this karma that we call being rude. Yeah. So even though we say, oh, it's one action, the action of being rude, it's actually many things, isn't it? Okay. So it's not one because it's many. But is it inherently many? Okay, if it were inherently many, then each of those different parts would in and of itself be the action of being rude. But none of those moments in and of themselves is the action of being rude. Okay, instead what we do is we have this basis of designation. All these different events, all these different moments of body, speech, and mind. And in dependence upon them, we give it the label, the action of being rude. Okay? But there's no action of being rude anywhere in any of those parts. Yeah? And the action of being rude isn't one action, and it's not many actions. It's something that exists by being labeled independence upon that base. Get what I'm saying? Okay? So when we're analyzing karma, any particular action, it's not an inherently singular action. It's not an inherently multiple action. It's not one or many. But it does exist by being merely labeled. And in the same way, the results of actions, the things that we experience, aren't one, and they aren't many. Okay? We're sitting here in the meditation hall right now. This is, we're experiencing the result of some of our karma. Okay? Is this result of listening to teachings in the meditation hall, is this an inherently one action? You know, inherently singular action or an inherently many action. Okay. Yeah. It can't be an inherently singular action because it's happening over time and there's all these different moments. And it's dependent on so many people and it's dependent on our hearing, thinking, and meditating. Everything's going on at once. So it's not just one thing, what we call listening to the teachings. But is the this result of listening to the teachings, this result of being in the meditation hall, listening to the teachings, is it an inherently multiple or many action, Well, no, because if it's not one, if it can't be inherently one, then it can't be inherently many. And also, because if it were inherently many, all of the different parts of it would be totally unrelated to each other. So the first moment of sitting in the hall wouldn't be related to the second moment and wouldn't be related to the third moment, because all these moments would be their own little isolated, inherently existent, independent, you know, not dependent on anything else, entity, and that's not it. Okay? So the result we're experiencing isn't inherently existent. The cause we create, it causes we create aren't inherently existent either. Okay? So, in this whole thing, what, you know, what he's been trying to show in the last few verses is that even though things are not inherently existent, cause and effect still functions. Karma and its result still work. And so therefore it's important to observe the functioning, the law of karma and its result. Okay? Because if we go to the extreme of nihilism and say everything's empty, therefore do what you want to do, okay, then you're going to wind up creating a ton of negative karma thinking that you're not. Yeah? That's a mess. Yeah? So he's really emphasizing here, in the preceding verse, remember he was talking about the music and how the music is empty of inherent existence, and yet we can still hear it. We can feel joy listening to some music and sorrow feeling listening to other music. And we listen to the symphony, and it's not one instrument. Okay? It's dependent on a combination. It's not one moment of sound. It's dependent on many moments of sound. So that was the analogy for the thing, what he's trying to prove here, is that karma and its results, similarly, although they're empty, they function. And causes bring results, and results depend on causes. In other words, things aren't chaotic. Yeah. Yeah. Now, in our life in general, we don't think things are chaotic. I mean, we all know that if you plant crops, you do that because you think they're going to grow into something. Yeah, you didn't go out in the springtime and plant all those things thinking nothing's going to happen. Yeah, you have a feeling something's going to happen. So you create the causes. So in the same way, you know, we want to create the causes if we think of future lives and think that they're going to happen. And we want to grow something good for future lives, then we plant the causes now. Or if we want the results of liberation and enlightenment, we have to create the causes now. Yeah. We don't just say, oh, it happens, you know. It's all chaos. Just, you know, doesn't matter. Because that's kind of a mess, isn't it? Okay. So, like apparitions, they affect the risings and cessations of phenomena. Okay, so karma and its effects, causes and conditions, okay, it has everything to do with the rising and ceasing of various phenomena. Yeah. They arise, they cease, we're born, we die, things come, they go. Relationships come together, they change and split apart. They split apart, they come together. Okay? So all these things vividly appear to arise and perish, but none of them are inherently existent. And all these experiences we have, some are pleasurable, some are painful, some are neutral. Okay? We experience all these things, but none of them inherently exist. They're all dependent. Okay? They arise due to causes. They're mere apparitions, okay? In the sense that it's a mere appearance. When you investigate with ultimate analysis, you can't find anything there. Okay? So that was the thing that I was saying yesterday, you know, or not yesterday, but a few days ago, the last teaching, like, you know, when you feel something painful, then to ask yourself, what is the pain? Because you say, ow, that hurts. So while you're saying, ow, that hurts, look and try and find what it is that's painful. Try and find the pain. Okay? Or ask yourself, how do I know I'm experiencing pain? On what basis do I say pain? It's really interesting, you know, because when we don't analyze, we just go, oh, that hurts, I don't like it, get it out of here, you know? But if we analyze and say, well, what is it that's painful? Or the same way, when your mind is like all giddy, like, ooh, this is so wonderful, you know, then just stop and say, what's so pleasurable? How do I know I'm experiencing pleasure? What is this pleasure that I'm experiencing? Okay, try and find it. It's extremely interesting when you do. Okay? Or when you're in a bad mood and you're saying, I'm in a bad mood, I feel so grumpy, you better be nice to me. You know, then instead of doing the you better be nice to me trick, sit there and think, well, how do I know I'm in a bad mood? What is this bad mood? What does a bad mood feel like? And you just sit there with your own experience. You're not writing a dissertation in your head with words about what a bad mood is. You're looking in your own experience and what is a bad mood? Find that bad mood that you say you're feeling. Okay? This is the kind of teaching that next time somebody else is in a bad mood, you want to tell them to do. But when we're in a bad mood, we forget this teaching. Very interesting to look at it. Okay, so seemingly real, one experiences joy and pain of every kind. So in samsara, we experience all sorts of different things, up and down, in and out, like, don't like. Okay? So because there's all these different experiences, because they all depend on causes, because they're all empty, so within these, this mere appearance, I'll follow the norms of ethics. Okay?